Good evening, everyone. My name is Anthony, and I am definitely an alcoholic. I had a kind of a difficult weekend. I had a trying weekend. I had some things going on with my family, and I wasn't really too sure about coming up here tonight. And I've just been dealing with a couple of things that are kind of personal, but there's a little bit of difficulty going on with some family members, and required my attention, so I'm going to do the best I can to carry a message tonight. We've been talking about the work we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and up until this point, we've talked about everything up to the inventory process. I felt like last week when I came in, it was kind of a technical talk. Whenever you talk about inventory, writing inventory is a very academic process. I've always felt that way. It's very academic for me. The spiritual part of the inventory process, I think it happens when I pray and I put the pen to the paper, because a lot of stuff will jump off that pen and jump onto that paper. And I had, a great spiritual teacher who told me once, the purpose of all of these 12 steps is to help us uncover, discover, and discard those things in ourselves which are blocking us and are causing a lot of the failures in our life. Now, I don't know if you're anything like me, but when I first come into Alcoholics Anonymous, my life is full of failure. Full of failure. Everything I ever tried my hand at and really wanted, I failed at. I failed at relationship after relationship after relationship. I failed at career after career after career. And it was beyond the alcohol. Because I knew I had an alcohol problem coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew I had a problem with alcohol. But I also, at the same time, thought I just had a problem with life. And I couldn't figure out why, what was causing all these failures. And so, I come in here. And so, I came in through the ICU. I had come to, I was in an ICU. I had no idea how I got there. If you've ever been in the ICU, anybody ever been in the ICU here? You wake up and you're like in a tent. There's like a tent around you, right? And you have no idea. I have this catheter stapled into my neck and they're running dirt. I have no idea what's going on. My right arm is paralyzed. My head is smashed in. I have no idea how I got there. And I was lost, man. But I said a prayer and I said a prayer and I said it to God. I said, God, please, if you can hear me, if you get me out of this hospital room, I'll do whatever it takes to recover. And something happened. Something happened for me that day. And I really do think that something reached into my heart, something not of this world, and just kind of shifted something inside of me. Because something changed in me that very day. And that's what I, listen, when I come in and I say my sobriety date is May 1st of 2016, that's really a date of rebirth for me. I can talk about the work that I've done and the work that we do, and I can talk about all the things I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm currently the GSR for my home group. I've done commitment after commitment after commitment. I've sponsored guys. I've had a few different sponsors. I've been through the steps multiple times. All that work is not why I'm sober today. I'm sober today by the grace and mercy of a loving God, who reached into my heart and shifted something from me and brought about a spiritual experience, right? Brought about a psychic change that I can't really explain. I can't put human words to it, But I had a sponsor that loved me enough, and he stood by me through thick and thin, and he took me through this process yet again, right? And I just want to say, if you're new here, or if you've struggled and you've experienced relapse after having some time and after having some experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to tell you, if at first you do not succeed, please pick yourself up and continue to march on. Please. Because the other option with this thing is death and permanent insanity. So, and I'm not trying to scare you sober, but it took a few times of going through the steps before I had something substantial occur for me. And so I went through the first three steps and I really saw, in the first step I saw my need for power, in step two and three, I decided I was, whatever it was that was out there, whatever power it was that kept me breathing, because time after time, I shouldn't be here today. I'm here by the grace and mercy of a loving God. you know. And so I decided whatever that was, I was going to put my full trust and faith. And I sat down and I wrote an inventory, right? And I wrote three inventories. I'm going to start this talk tonight. If you guys can open up to page 66, because there's something I realized I didn't mention last time when we went over inventory. If you go to the bottom of page 66, the last sentence on the page says, "We realized the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick." You know, and the truth is, we don't go through this inventory to find out what our part was. I don't know where people get that from. What's your part? You know, there are some things we have absolutely no part in. You know, I've heard fifth step after fifth step after fifth step. And you know what's a common occurrence with alcoholics? People who get sexually abused and physically abused as children, emotionally abused, abandonment. Right? Are you gonna? Am I gonna sit here across the table from a young man and tell him that you have a part in that, my young man? We do make mistakes, though, don't we? You know, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but I was sexually abused as a child, and I didn't go to any adult when it happened. I never mentioned a word about it. I was so embarrassed and so ashamed, and I just didn't. I was so terrified. I never went to an adult. I never talked to my mother. I never talked to my father. I never talked to a teacher. I never talked to a therapist. I never went to a guidance counselor. I just shoved it under the seat. And I shoved it under the rug, and I hoped it would go away. And I dragged it into every relationship I ever had. And I dragged other people through the mud. So I did make some mistakes. And I had to put this all out on paper. But you know what it says? I just want to go over there. There are six prayers in the fourth step. The first one is, it says, we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. That's difficult at times, isn't it? When someone really, really does us wrong, that's a really difficult thing to do. And so he expands on that. We're on the top of page 67. Here's a second prayer here. This is a sick man. How can I be helpful? God, save me from being angry. Your will, not mine, be done. You know, the truth is, I could walk around and have justified anger, and I could do that. I could do that well into my recovery. But what does that do for me? You know, I recently fifth stepped with my sponsor, and I read him some stuff, and he said, "Wow, that's justified." He said, "Wow, I really understand what you're talking about. That would make anyone angry." But the truth is, we don't have the dubious luxury of normal men. We can't walk around with justified anger. If we turn the page, we'll look at the next prayer, which is regarding our fear. There's a fear prayer in the fourth step. And this is not only good in the fourth step, but this is good just in general. I use this prayer in my 10th steps when fear crops up. God, please remove this fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. To what you would have me be. And this is the ideal that we live by. You know, for many, many, many years, the reason I never had any kind of spiritual connection, and I was blocked off from anything good. I was blocked off from really achieving anything that I was created to achieve. You know, and I think that we're all born basically good. That's what I think. We're born pure. We come out of our mother's womb good. We think good thoughts. And what happens to us is we start to have this human experience, and it dents us up and it dings us up. And the longer I stay alive, the more I realize I have a need for power. On page 69, we're going to look at some prayers in the sex inventory. About halfway down the page, when we start to talk about this sex ideal, how we're gonna be moving forward after this inventory, we ask God to mold our ideals and to help us live up to them. A little bit further down the page, another prayer says, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. And we could do that in our morning meditations. And then on 70 is the final fourth step prayer. It says, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and for strength to do the right thing. I don't always have the strength to do the right thing. You know that? So here we are, we're in chapter 6, into action. Now I just want to say this about the fifth step of recovery. It was the first step I really just didn't want to do. You know, listen, I with a little bit of prodding, I was able to write that fourth step. But that a lot of that stuff was just kept between me. You know, a lot of that stuff I had never repeated to someone else, but I had a lot of fear connected to the fact that now I had to bring this inventory and I had to share this with another man. And a lot of this stuff, I want to tell you, I've heard fifth step after fifth step after fifth step after fifth step. And a lot of the stuff people share, it's all the same. You know, if there's a name, it's been done, and it's been done by millions and millions of people. This is what I tell people all the time. It's definitely been done by me. I'm one of the sickest guys out there. But so I'm just going to read a little bit of this and share a little bit and share some of my experience with 5. We'll try to talk about 5, 6, and 7 today, and we'll take it home. So it says, having made our personal inventory, we're on page 72, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude. And, you know, my sponsor asked me, he said, are you trying to get a new attitude? Are you? Because we come into Alcoholics Anonymous for all kinds of different reasons, you know. I'm coming into Alcoholics Anonymous in the beginning just to kind of make friends. Maybe I could find a relationship in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Maybe I could get some free coffee and some free cookies and some free donuts. But really ask yourself, are you trying to get a new attitude toward your life? Are you trying to get a new relationship with a creator? You know, and it doesn't say get a relationship, right? Because chances are, you already have a relationship. You already have a relationship. You're already connected to power, right? You wouldn't be here if you weren't. Your heart wouldn't be beating. You wouldn't be breathing air. But the real question is, do you want a new one? You know, and if you want a new relationship with a creator, this fifth step is an integral step. It may be one of the most important steps in the process, right? And for me, this is where the spiritual experience began. It says, do you want to get a new relationship with your creator and to discover the obstacles in your path? And so, you know, the first thing we have to realize, and I started to realize this when I started writing the inventory, but the inventory process is not just step 4. And it's not even just step 4 and 5. It's not even 4, 5, 6, and 7. It's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. I don't complete this inventory until I've gone out to the world and I've tried to set these matters right. When I've done that, and I've done it to the best of my ability, I've completed the inventory process. You know? And so it says this, right? Have we admitted certain defects? Have we ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is? And really, we should start to see, as we start to write this inventory, what the trouble is. It says, have we put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory? So if you can answer yes to all these questions, here is a promise. Now, these are about to be cast out. Really think about what they're saying, right? Now, I don't know about you guys, but my sponsor asked me, he said, do you believe these are going to be cast out? Just by this simple process of confession, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about this. You know, if you guys want to just real quickly turn to, in the fourth edition, turn to page 263, you'll see on page 263 where all the original steps were that come from the Oxford group. One was complete deflation. They said we got the first 3 steps from that first tenet of the Oxford group. 2 is dependence and guidance from a higher power. They say Bill Wilson kind of created steps 10 and 11 from that tenet. 3, moral inventory. There's step 4. And then here it is, the big one. 4, confession. 5, 6, and 7. 5, 6, and 7, which is what we're going to talk about today. This is a simple act of confession. People have been doing it for, you know, since the beginning of time. Every spiritual or religious movement on the planet has done some form of confession. It's a fact. And why do you think they do it? Because it works. It works And I'll tell you, I know from personal experience, if you're new and you haven't experienced the fifth step and really, really experienced going through this inventory the way the big book designs us to do it, you're really doing yourself a disservice. And my experience is like this, by the time I finish the inventory and I've really gone to God in 6 and 7 and I've really turned my life over to God and I start to make these amends, a lot of these things were cast out permanently. A lot of it. Some of these things obviously live on, and we're going to talk about some of that a little later. But this requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. And that's a little bit different than it's written on the wall, isn't it? Right? It says this brings us to the fifth step. They just said that means that we will admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. On the wall it says what? Wrongs, right? You know what's funny? I don't know where I read this. I read it somewhere, but they asked Bill Wilson, sometimes it says wrongs, sometimes it says defects, sometimes it says shortcomings. Why do you use all kinds of different words? And he said, I learned in the fourth grade that you're not supposed to use the same word twice. So I chose to use different words, but they all mean the same thing when we're talking about defects, when we're talking about our wrongs, when we're talking about our shortcomings. We're talking about our character flaws. That's what we're talking about. And so this brings us to the fifth step in recovery, and the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. So I just want to talk about the warning on the bottom of this page, because there are some warnings that come along with the fifth step, right? And the first one is here. It says, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. You know what I have written in my book over May? I have will. Now let me reread it the way I have it. If we skip this vital step, we will not overcome drinking. And it's been my experience, And listen, I always say my experience because you guys can't argue my experience. It's my experience, right? And it's not only my personal experience, but it's been my experience sponsoring other people. And it's been my experience hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous meetings since 1995. That people who write fourth steps and read fifth steps and go on and continue with the inventory process and sponsor other people usually stay sober. They usually stay sober. People who don't complete a fourth step and successfully fifth step almost always get drunk. And some of them die. And it's a sad fact. But they give us this. It says, if we skip this vital step, we will not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods, almost invariably. Meaning that there's almost no other way, almost invariably, they get drunk. They get all lit up like a Christmas tree. And listen, for us to drink is to die. How many times does this book tell us that? Right? But I want to just focus on something that they said. They said they have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. A little bit further down this page, it says they took inventory, all right, but they hung on to some of the worst items in stock. I'm not trying to be crude at all, but I've been doing this program long enough to know what the worst items in stock are. They're almost always connected to the sexual inventory. Period. Right? And let me tell you something. I don't care what it is. If it's heterosexual, if it's homosexual, if it's, a transsexual, asexual, pansexual, whatever kind of sexual is, if it's got a name, it's been done millions and millions of times by millions and billions of people, and it's probably been done by me. But people who hold on to some of these things because they're lost and guilt and shame and remorse. Let me tell you something. I could tell you that I went through my life and there were certain things about myself that I would say, I'm going to take that to my grave. I'm not going to share that with another human being. And I got a news for you. If you think you're going to take that to the grave, I can promise you that that will take you to the grave. And it will put you 6 feet under the ground. Well, we'll talk about this a little more as we go through this. But it says, but they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense that we find it necessary until they told someone else
all their life story. And you know what? It doesn't say that we have to tell everyone under the sun, does it? Look at the bottom of the page. It says we must. And I was told every time it says must, we got to really pay attention. We're at the bottom of 73, by the way. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. What does it say we have to be honest with? One other person, that's it. You know what? It doesn't even say you got to be completely honest with your spouse, does it? Honestly, does it say that? No. And let me tell you something. I don't think that, probably most people are not completely honest with their spouses. Right? But that's why I need someone like a spiritual teacher, a spiritual advisor, a sponsor. Right? So I can have those conversations and those uncomfortable conversations, and I know how to go back to the spouse. And I know how to handle that situation which used to baffle me. I got to be completely honest with at least one other person if I want to live long and happily in this life. Now, I am going to read this next bit. A lot of people say it's worthless. Because you got to realize, I want to just tell you that when this book was written, we didn't have sponsors. The word sponsor is never in the first 164 pages of this book. You know that? You may find it in the back of the book, but you're not going to find it in the first 164 because this was a mail order book, right? There were two Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. There was one in Cleveland, there was one in New York, then there was a third one in Akron, right? That was it. There weren't meetings in every city. So when they wrote this book, this was a mail order book, right? There was a couple of articles. If you had someone do a workshop on the forward to the second edition, you know. The Saturday Evening Post was one. I don't know what the other one was. I get off the top of my head. Alcoholics and God. And they printed these two articles, and people were writing Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were literally mail ordering this book. So you'd be living in Skokie, Illinois, and, you know, your spouse would, you know, oh, my wife has a drinking problem, and they saw the article, and they would write Alcoholics Anonymous, and they'd receive a book in the mail. And people would open up this book, and they would follow the directions, right? And they'd get sober, right? And, one guy told me that the term meeting makers make, it actually comes from, you know, if you received this book in the mail back in the 40s, and you went through the 12 steps as outlined in the book, and then you went out and you started sponsoring other people, and you started your own meeting, you made the meeting, you became a meeting maker, and you would make it, right? That's, I don't know if that's true, but that's what an old timer told me once, that that's where that comes from. But it says this, right? Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom we take this intimate and confidential step. So those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must, there's that word must, and of course will want to go to the properly appointed authority whose duty is to receive it. Now, my first sponsor, Mr. Tom Ho, talked to him today actually. Wonderful, wonderful guy. I didn't want to read him my sex inventory. I didn't want to read him my sex inventory to the point where I kept needling him and needling him and needling him and needling him. And I went right to the place in this book that we just read. And I said, you see what it says there, brother? Those of us who belong to a religious denomination which requires confession must. You told me I have to pay attention to every must. I must go to the priest. I have to go to the priest to read him this inventory. And you know what he said to me to appease me? He said, Anthony, if you're going to use the book like that, like a weapon, I can't argue with you. If you want to go to the priest with just the sex inventory, I will allow it. But you have to give him spiritual consent. Which means, whatever he tells you, you got to do. And I said, check, done. Because you know why? I knew that a priest took a vow. Right? And a priest takes a vow that he can't repeat anything you say. And I thought I got a pass. But you see, I believed in this process enough that I went down and I fifth stepped with the priest. And I read on the sex inventory. And it wasn't as fearless and as thorough as some of the inventories I've written since then. But I got a lot of it out. I talked about a lot of the stuff. You know, I talked about paying for sex, and I talked about all these broken relationships and how I was selfish and self-seeking and self-centered. I talked about pornography. I talked about everything that was inside of me that was blocking me, man. And I was crying my eyes out. And you know, I want to just tell you something, man. I fifth-stepped many, many times, but I never had the experience I could never recreate the first time I fifth stepped, man. And I sat there with this priest, man. And, you know, he said something to me. He grabbed my hand and he squeezed it. And he told me that he loved me. You know, and he said, Anthony, you know, this business of sex wouldn't be a multi-trillion dollar business if you were the only one doing it. He said, you're perfectly human. But you know what he said to me? He said, but you do have sex and love problems. And I want to start meeting with you. And I want to start meeting with you regularly, like once or twice a month. And we're going to do some counseling. You came to me for help, and I'm going to give you help. And my sponsor, Tom, told me I needed to do what he told me to do. So I start meeting with this guy. And I'm meeting with him a couple of times a month, you know. And I'm really getting to know this guy, and I'm really getting to like this guy. And then I walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting one day, and there she is, the big blue eyes from across the room. And she smiles at me, and I smile at her, and boy meets girl on AA campus, and that's how it goes. So I march back into that priest's office, and I start telling him all about this woman that I met. I thought he was going to be excited for me, you know. But you know what he tells me? He says, no, Anthony, you're not ready for that. You got work to do. You need to tell her to cool it. And I got really angry. And I snapped at this guy and I said, who the heck do you think you are? You're a priest. What do you know about being in a relationship with a woman? I'm not taking anything from you. I'm not taking advice. I had a couple of four-letter words for him, too. I wasn't very nice about it. And I stormed out of his office. And I didn't talk to him until about 7 or 8 years later because he was absolutely right about what he said to me. I moved to Los Angeles with that girl, and I got this beautiful girl who loves me, and she's living in the apartment with me, and I have sex problems, and I have love problems, and I never really got straight in that area. And I'm going into hotel room after hotel room after hotel room in the wrong place with the wrong time with the wrong people, and I walked into the wrong room one day, and there was a glass pipe on the bed. And that was all she wrote. And I became so broken. And in 2018, I flew down to Charlotte, North Carolina to knock on the front door of that church to tell that man that you were 100% right about everything you said to me, and you were truthful and you were honest, and I should have listened to you. You know, these things that we do, these suggestions that are made in this book, they're only as good as, you know, as we are willing to do them. As we are willing to receive them, you know. So, you know, it is important who we pick. I just want to tell you that. We're going to skip this whole area here where they talk about if we can or rather. You know, the next paragraph here says, if we cannot or would rather not do this, we search our acquaintance for a closed mouth or understanding friend. Perhaps a doctor or a psychologist will be the person. Maybe. It might be one of our own family. Wrong. Don't ever do that. I'm telling you that right now. It says, because listen to what it says, because we cannot disclose anything to our wives or our parents which will hurt them and make them unhappy. You know, and that's the truth. We can't use this to put ourselves in a position. And that's another thing that we do. You know, there's a whole other chapter in this book called The Chapter to Wives where it says, you know, be careful of the man who will use this book as a weapon and use this chapter as a club over your head. You know, we don't want to use these 12 steps as a weapon. You know, we need to find neutral ground. We're in Alcoholics Anonymous today. There's plenty of people who are perfectly, perfectly capable of hearing a fifth step. I'll listen to anyone's fifth step. Just give me a call. If you want my number after the meeting, I'll give it to you. The truth is, we don't, you know, today we have Alcoholics Anonymous and we have a thriving fellowship and we have many, many people who will sit down and listen to this effectively. So it says this. Let's skip to the next page. When we decide who it is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. Now, I just want to tell you that gives us direction not only as a sponsee but as a sponsor here. Because it says we prepare ourselves for a long talk. So that means I don't just like sit there and listen. I have a conversation with someone. I have a long talk with someone.
And sometimes it's longer than others. Now, the sponsor I'm working with now, I'm in the middle of a monster fifth step, and he only listens to an hour at a time. So right now, it's an hour a week, you know. But I don't recommend that to someone who's new. Anyone who I take the steps through for the first time, I always prepare myself for a long talk. You know, I will set aside whatever time it is. I literally had a sponsee one time who showed up with 3-5 subject notebooks full of inventory. He spent months and months and months of writing this inventory. So, you know what I said? I took a couple of days off of work. I took Thursday and Friday off of work. We started Thursday morning. And we started reading about 6 in the morning. We went until about 1 o'clock a.m. that night. We slept for a few hours. We got up at 6 in the morning on Friday. We read all day. We went until about 1 o'clock in the morning that night. We went to sleep. We woke up Saturday. We did the same thing Saturday. We did the same thing Sunday. I had a speaking commitment out in the middle of Pennsylvania, 2-hour ride. I threw him in the car. He read to me the whole way. I went into the meeting. I talked for an hour. I got back in the car. The whole way home, he read, and we finished Monday morning about 2 a.m. in my driveway. But let me just qualify something for you. I think I got more out of that than he did. Because he definitely had a spiritual experience, but you know what? So did I. The reason I listened to fifth step after fifth step after fifth step is because, you know, my sponsor, and I think I brought this up when we were talking about the first couple of steps. My sponsor once asked me, he said, "Anthony, do you think that you need to experience the same sense of ease and comfort that you get from your recovery program, that you get from taking a few drinks, or do you believe that you're destined to give in to the desire to drink again?" And every time I hear a fifth step, I get all lit up like a Christmas tree on December 24th. And I feel the power. And that's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we prepare ourselves for a long talk. We explain to our partner what it is we have to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Do you know what that means? That means if you fifth step, you'll probably live. And if you don't fifth step, well, figure it out. Hey, listen, I'm just reading you a book. This isn't my opinion. When someone tells me it's a life or death errand, what that simply means is that if I want to live, I better do it. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. So here are the directions. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Now listen, here's the thing. Before I wrote the inventory, I knew the 6 or 7 things I was not going to disclose to someone else. I already knew what they were. You know, I didn't have to figure it out. What I needed to do was tap into this power and ask God for the courage to share these things. You know, it says this, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing. I have that underlined. Withholding nothing. You know why I have that underlined? Because they literally mean I can't withhold anything. You know, and here's the thing. It tells us withholding nothing. We just talked about holding on to the worst items in our stock. We go home, tell us to take an hour alone and really think about, did I leave anything out? We can't withhold anything. You know, these things, if we want to be free, we got to be willing to share this with someone else and to share it with our Creator. Listen, here's the thing. If you did it with someone else, if there's at least one other person in the world that knows, that's the truth. Chances are we did do these things with someone else if we're just afraid to admit it, right? So if we do this and we hold nothing, we will experience exactly the promises that I'm about to read. We'll be delighted. Now, I don't know what that's going to look like to you, but think about that word, we'll be delighted. You know, when that priest squeezed my hand and told me, and you want to know something, every sponsor I've ever fifth stepped with, you know what their responses always were to me and still are? I did that too. In fact, they may even share the experience. Like, dude, this is exactly what happened. Bop, 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 bop. Yep, that happened to me too. Oh my God, that happened to me 6 times.
You know? And all of a sudden, I start to feel normal again, man. You know, I don't know about you, but when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was so disconnected with everything that was going on in my life. I could not feel normal. I felt broken. I felt lonely. I felt afraid. It says we can look at the world in the eye. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I could never look anyone in the eye. I'd come into the room and look at the ground and look around. I'd be talking to you, but I'd never look at you. What's that? How's your day? I don't know. They're looking at the floor, right? But now I could actually look the world in the eye. I could actually engage with people. I don't feel like I'm hiding anything anymore. We could be alone at perfect peace and ease. That's a really powerful promise, because ask yourself this question. Listen, you don't have to answer it right now, but really consider this. That when you're done here, you know, and you leave your home group, and you're disconnected with everyone, and you go home, and maybe you have a spouse at home, I don't know, but you end up in your room, and you draw your blinds, and you're all alone just with yourself. Ask yourself this question. Are you at perfect peace and ease? Or are you restless, irritable, and a little bit discontented? Now, what we're talking about here is a spiritual experience. And we're obviously talking about something that comes and goes. You know, there's absolutely no way we could live connected to the power and connected to God and connected to the Spirit 100% of the day. It's impossible. But I can tell you that when I finished the fifth step, this is how I felt. Our fears begin to fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. And you want to know the truth? I didn't start to have a spiritual experience until I did this step, withholding nothing. And the first thing I noticed is, I was a guy that was in and out of AA, and I could never really feel connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. I could never feel connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. And once I fifth-stepped, I felt like I had this shared experience that I could walk in and share. I could share my experience with the people around me, and I felt connected. I felt like now, all of a sudden, man, I'm part of this thing. You know, and listen, if you have not taken this step and you haven't had this experience, I feel sorry for you. Because you'll never really have a full Alcoholics Anonymous experience until you've done these simple, simple things that we ask of you, that I don't ask of you, that this book asks of us. Right? I'm only reading you a book. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come on strongly. We feel that we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Whatever that means to you. I know it's Bill Wilson uses this big language, hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe, but I can tell you I felt connected to something bigger than myself. I started to feel free. I started to experience freedom from alcohol, freedom from bondage of self. So let's just get into this. It says, returning home, we find a place where we can, be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. Here's the only prayer in the fifth step. We ask God from the bottom of our heart. We thank Him that we know Him better. Thank you, God, for this experience. Thank you, God, for this experience with my sponsor. Thank you, God, for this experience with Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you for letting me get to know you just a little bit better. You know, taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. We carefully review the first five proposals, and we ask ourselves, have we omitted anything? Have we omitted anything in the first step? Have we been completely honest? Do we have no reservations, right? Are we completely willing in the second step? Have we made this firm decision and really thought about a concept of God? Did I write this inventory honestly? And most importantly, did I share everything with my sponsor? For we are building an arch through which we shall walk, free men and free women at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement we put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Now, I didn't know what all this stuff meant until a sponsor pointed out to me that, really, look at your program. What does your program look like? Are you all step work? Because let me tell you something. I used to be the guy that was all step work. Just you come anywhere near me and I will hit you with the spine of the book. What does my fellowship look like? Am I doing meetings?
Am I a member of a home group? Do I have a commitment in my home group? You know? That's what we mean when we talk about the cement, the mortar, the sand, all of it. We have to have a good mixture, man. You know? And so it says, if we can answer those questions satisfactorily, if we can say yes, 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 check, 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 then we're ready to look at step six, which is we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Now, we talked about willingness in the first step. We talked about willingness in the second step. We talked about willingness in the third step. We talked about willingness in the fourth step. We talked about willingness in the fifth step. But really, the sixth step, and the sixth step is one that gets glossed over, and I think it's the most important step in the entire 12-step process. Are you really willing? You know, listen, we've done a lot of work so far. Now they're going to ask us a question here, and it's really a prayer. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted objectionable? Listen, I just had a conversation about this the other day. I spoke on this big Zoom meeting. I had like 300 people, and I had like four or five guys call me, and one guy called me when I was driving home from work. I have like an hour commute, and he wanted to talk to me. He called me up and he says, I'm struggling with some unmanageability. And I said, well, what's the unmanageability you're struggling with? He said, well, I'm in my eighth step, and I'm putting together my eighth step list, and I'm on and off with this one young lady, and we've been on and off for 4 years, and I'm trying to work things out with her, and I'm texting with three other women. And I said, are you having sex with three other women? And there was silence. I said, I understand. Is this now objectionable? I mean, that's the real question. Because when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, what I found objectionable back then, what I didn't find objectionable back then, I tell you that year six is completely objectionable. And unfortunately, we come in and we look at this fourth step and we look at all of our selfishness and all of our dishonesty and all of our fear, right? And we look at all of our envy and all of our jealousy and all of our lust and all of that pride that eats us up from the inside out. And you know what pride is, right? I know better than you. I know better than you, and I know better than you, and I even know better than you, God. You know? And I see it when I write the fourth step. But the problem is with these character defects, many of them go back to when I was just a child. And you know what I told them when I was on the phone with them? I said, brother, I know it feels good to text three women. That's why you're doing it. You like the effect it produces. Lust and dishonesty. You like the effect it produces in you, just like you like the effect the alcohol produces in you. And unfortunately, you weren't ready to do anything about your alcohol problem until you felt enough pain. Isn't that right? And he said, yeah. I said, well, if it's not objectionable to you, you need to feel a little more pain. I'm sorry, but that's the only answer I have for you. I don't know. This thing with character defects is like this, man. Character defects do something for me. It's like this, right? And I say this a lot. I know this is going to sound kind of crude, but who here has little children? Has anyone had children in here? And when you're trying to potty train children and you got them on diapers, right? And the kid you can't potty train the kid, right? I mean, he's over there, he's in the corner of the room, and he's got his little diapers on, and he's scrunched up in the corner, and you can see what he's doing. He's holding it, and he's about to let it go. And then he lets it go, and the whole room stinks up, right? And people are coming up to you and saying, why don't you potty train that kid? But you see what those people don't understand? Is that kid likes it. He likes the way it feels. And that's the way we are with our character defects. I like dishonesty. I like selfishness. I like fear. You know, fear actually provides something for me. It provides security. When I'm lost in fear and I'm acting on that fear, I'm protecting myself. So I've got to get to the point where this, where all of these things become objectionable to the point that I can say, you can now have all of them, God, everyone. Take them. I'm yours. You know,
you know, listen, I, you know, when I first came in and my sponsor said, you know, the third step is just a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, and that's it. It's just a decision to go on, write this inventory and read this inventory and go to God in 6 and 7 and make amends to the best of your ability. And you know what? That I needed that to get by. But then I'm 5 years sober and I'm crying myself to sleep because I still got so many problems and so many defects of character that I just don't have any relief from. Then I call my current sponsor. And the first question he asks me, he says, tell me where it hurts. Tell me where it hurts. You know, I told him where it hurts, and he, for an hour, he broke it down and he told me exactly what was wrong with me. And I knew, I said, this is the man I need to work with. And he asked me, and he said, how willing are you to give everything to him? Period. You know, because we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's real easy for us to get our alcohol and our drug addiction to him, isn't it? Right? Our backs are against the wall. Our asses are on fire. Our world is falling apart. But the sex stuff and the love stuff, I'm going to hold on to that over here. The job stuff and the money stuff, I'm going to hold on to that over here. And you guys have heard it in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings many, many times. Sex and checks, right? What is it? Romance and finance, right? These are the things. Listen, I cannot give it to him. I cannot. I need to do this on a daily basis. And it says if we still cling to something we will not let go of, they're going to give us the 6-step prayer. Here it is. We ask God to help us be willing. If I'm not willing, I need to ask God to help me be willing. You know, I think we should point sponsees to this before we even take them through the first step. Because if you're not willing to do the things you need, you know, listen, the 6th step says we are entirely willing to have God remove these defects of character. Without willingness, I can't do anything. You know, that's the heart. Listen, I want to tell you, like, the spiritual principle behind the 6th step of willingness and the spiritual principle behind the 7th step of humility, if you have those 2 things, the job is done. Everything goes back to step 6 and 7. If you master 6 and 7, you have mastered the 12 steps. I don't think anyone ever will, but that's the truth, right? I've got to have the willingness to do this thing, and if I don't have the willingness, I've got to tap into the power, and I've got to ask him, please God, just help me be willing. And if you've done those things, you've done your part. You've completed step 6. That's all there is to it. I've never had a single person read that silly book, Drop the Rock. I don't have people read that. Because the idea that I can fix and manage my life, that means I have all the power. The first step says, you know, I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable. But yet I try to manage my character defects. I try to manage my relationships. I try to manage my emotions. I've got to trust in something greater than myself. And when we talk about step 6 and 7, we're talking about something we can't necessarily see, feel, touch. You know, we're talking about something called faith. That's the truth. So, when ready, we say something like this. You know, I love, you know, every time they say a prayer, like the 3rd step prayer, the 7th step prayer, they don't say we have to say it like it's, say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to others. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. 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 You know, here's the thing about the 7th step prayer. There are people who tell their sponsees, you know, if you're struggling with honesty, right? If you're struggling with honesty, get down on your knees and ask God to remove your dishonesty and to grant you honesty. That's not the directions we get in the book, is it? You know, the truth, and I just want to share this because one of my worst defects of character is my alcoholism. Do you guys agree with that? That alcoholism is a really bad defect of character, but you know something? God never removes it. He uses it, doesn't he? He uses it as a way for me to carry some kind of message and help his kids. You know, the prayer says this: my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. You decide what to take. You decide. I don't know what's good for me. And I don't know what's bad for me. If I knew what was good for me and what was bad for me, I wouldn't be an Alcoholics Anonymous. Believe me when I tell you that I would not be here. I could do better things than to run around sponsoring guys. I woke up this morning. I got on a Zoom call with one of my sponsees from India, right? And then I had two other calls after that. One guy from North Carolina and one guy from here in New Jersey. My whole Sunday morning from about 8:30 in the morning until about 1:30 in the afternoon was devoted to that. My Sunday night was devoted to driving to Westfield, right? Most of my days look like that. I wouldn't be doing this stuff if I knew what was good for me and what was bad for me. So I got to say, God, you know what's good for me. So I want you to take all of me. I pray that you now remove from me the defects of character which are standing in the way of my usefulness to you and to others. What about the ones that aren't? Did you ever ask yourself that? What about those defects? You know, if I'm really doing this deal to the best of my ability and I'm turning things over, I'm praying every day, I'm waking up and reading my Thomas Merton like my sponsor tells me to. I do my prayer and meditation in the morning. I'm doing the best I can and things are still cropping up. Maybe they're supposed to crop up. It's just a consideration. I can tell you time after time after time after time after time where in hindsight I look back and I said, wow, I understand why I continued to struggle with lust in that time, because I see how God used it to affect others. You know, and if I was perfect and all my character defects were removed, I would have no need for any of this. And I would have no need for God. So, we have then completed step 7. So I just want to tell you, if you've been willing to have God remove all of these things that you found objectionable, and if not, you've gotten down on your knees and you've asked God to be willing, and you've gotten down on your knees and you've said the 7-step prayer. You know, nowhere in this, in these two paragraphs does it tell us to compile lists of character defects, does it? I mean, listen, if your sponsor's telling you to do that, fine, he's right, I'm wrong, right? But I was just taken through this book in a fashion where we just did what the book told us to do. You know, and the problem with 6 and 7 is it's like this. I don't experience it right away. You know, I God's working on me. You know, and I always like to talk about this, but there's a really like famous sculptor. His name was Michelangelo. We're all familiar with Michelangelo, right? I had gone over to the Vatican and I saw some things that he sculpted, man. Beautiful, beautiful things. But they would give him this huge block of marble. And he would just go at it for years sometimes. Tap, 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 tap. And when we do this 12-step work, that's what God's doing with us. Little chips at a time. Little pieces at a time. You know, but after years and years and years of doing this stuff, all of a sudden, he backs up and he looks at this thing, and they called it the Statue of David. One of the most beautiful sculptures the world has ever seen. And that's what God's doing in me. So I think that's where I'm just going to kind of leave us off. I hope this was useful to you guys. We will pick up with steps 8 and 9 next week, and I'm going to turn the meeting over to you guys. I want to hear what you have to say. Thank you.